This is a special Martin Luther King Day edition of Statehouse Watch on WNHNLP 94.7 FM and WNHNFM.org.
So let freedom ring from the prodigious hilltops of New Hampshire.
Was Ranky Tanky, a band from Charleston, South Carolina. They say the idea of freedom is at the heart of the American identity, and particularly for the Gullah people who are descendants of enslaved African Americans. Freedom is a universal anthem. The band says this song holds a universal truth, yet undoubtedly represents something different to every individual that hears it. We believe everyone in the world deserves the freedom to live in equality and prosperity, they say. I'm Arnie Alpert from the American Friends Service Committee, and you are listening to a special Martin Luther King Day episode of Statehouse Watch on WNHNLP. Maggie Fogarty and I are away at observances of Martin Luther King Day. Today's show will feature a speech given by Coretta Scott King in 1968 during the Poor People's Campaign. We'll also hear some music and some Martin Luther King Day reflections. Maggie and I will be back with a live show next week.
My name is Melanie Levake. I am a state senator for New Hampshire, District 12. Martin Luther King is a time that we can reflect on the hard work and struggles that people went through so that we could be free, so that we could buy a home, so that we could get an education and get a good job, so that we could be truly equal to all people. I believe the holiday is looking back and moving forward. We always have to look back at where we've come from, what the struggles were, so that we can appreciate where we need to go, as well as what we have today. Martin Luther King Day has always been an important day for me. I was just a child when he died. I remember when Bobby Kennedy died. But as I got older, I learned more and more about Martin Luther King Day, and it became a very important day because I realized that without him as a role model, as a leader of so many other people who helped to fight for our rights, I would not have the rights that I have today. And one of my goals is to make sure that our young people have those rights and more. Well, I'd like younger people to learn and to understand that the rights that we have were not just given to us for free. We did have to work for them. There was a time when life was different. And we must always try to improve ourselves, to work with others, to love each other, to try to be more understanding. That's what Martin Luther King really talked about. That's what his movements were about. And that's what makes our world a better place.
That was Senator Melanie Levake. The Reverend Jason Wells is executive director of the New Hampshire Council of Churches and one of the chairs of the New Hampshire Poor People's Campaign. I caught up to him at the State House, where he reflected on the long campaign to establish a King holiday in New Hampshire. The final victory in 1999 came when the legislature agreed to add Dr. King's name to Civil Rights Day, a holiday that had been championed by opponents of having a day actually named for Dr. King.
I think that changing from Civil Rights Day to Martin Luther King Day is a substantial and important change. I don't want to minimize or erase the other contributors to the civil rights cause, or to say that the Civil Rights Act and Voting Rights Act were not significant, but I believe that by honoring King, we honor those things and have a vision which encompasses them and goes broader than them. I'm mindful of his saying that it was important that we are able to integrate the lunch counter, but if a person gets to the counter and they can't afford a hamburger when they get there, we've missed part of the goal. That the analysis that King brings of moral economy as a part of civil rights and of voting rights is a significant one that is missed with just the name Civil Rights Day. And we need King's expansive vision and also the vision that he brings that is deeply rooted in our most deeply held spiritual and constitutional and moral values. The other reason that I think that the naming of Martin Luther King Day for these past 20 years is significant is that King's specific vision is still being lived out, that this was not a movement that happened in the 1960s, but the Poor People's Campaign continues to live out that vision of seeing the triple evils in the light of analysis of poverty, racism, militarism, and as we add today, our awareness of ecological devastation.
That was the Reverend Jason Wells. I'm Arnie Alpert from the American Friends Service Committee. You are listening to a special Martin Luther King Day edition of Statehouse Watch on WNHNLP. Keep Your Eyes on the Prize, Hold On is one of the most popular songs in the Freedom Song tradition. A lot of people know it derives from an older spiritual, Keep Your Hand on the Plow, one of those great songs that enslaved Africans sang with a coded message about the hope for liberation. I only just learned about Alice Wine and how the song changed from Hand on the Plow to Eyes on the Prize. Alice Wine came from a family of farm workers in Johns Island, South Carolina, and like many African-American women of her day, the 1940s, she made a living working as a housekeeper in the home of a white family. Encouraged by a local bus driver committed to civil rights, Alice Wine became determined to vote, and that meant she had to pass a literacy test with only a third-grade education. After a lot of study, she passed the test and registered to vote. She wasn't the only one trying, and they had help from the citizenship schools, run by the Tennessee-based Highlander Center. It was at one of their workshops that Alice Wine met Guy Carawan, Highlander's music director. According to an article by Benjamin Hedin, Guy Carawan spent winters on John's Island and often brought his guitar to class. On one occasion, he was playing Keep Your Hand on the Plow, Hold On, when Alice Wine approached him. "I know a different echo of that," she said, and proceeded to play the song with the now familiar Eyes on the Prize refrain. Guy Carawan, who was also known for the popularization of We Shall Overcome, brought Eyes on the Prize to the founding meeting of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee that April. It took off from there. Here's a 1960 recording of Alice Wine.
Oh, lone Christian mourners, oh, lone, keep your hand on that plow, oh, lone. I want to tell you the natural fact. When you get to heaven, you can't come back. Keep your eyes on the prize, oh, lone. Ain't but one thing I done wrong. I've been in the wilderness a day so long. Keep your eyes on the prize, hold on. Sitting mad and I so glad he missed the soul he thought he had. Keep your eyes on the prize, hold on. Oh, lone Christian mourners, oh, lone, keep your eyes on the prize, oh, lone. I just want to tell you the natural fact. If you get to heaven, you can't come back. Keep your eyes on the prize, oh, lone, oh, lone. Oh, lone, keep your eyes on the prize, oh, lone.
That was Alice Wine. I'm Arnie Alpert, and you are listening to a special Martin Luther King Day edition of Statehouse Watch on WNHN-LP 94.7 FM and WNHNFM.org. Maggie Fogarty and I will be back next week with a regular show about the goings-on at the Statehouse. When Dr. King was killed in Memphis in 1968, his associates decided to press forward with plans for the Poor People's Campaign, a project which aimed to bring thousands of poor people of many racial and ethnic backgrounds to the nation's capital to demand an end to poverty. When a people are mired in oppression, Dr. King said, they realize deliverance when they have accumulated the power to enforce change. Our nettlesome task is to discover how to organize our strength into compelling power so that government cannot elude our demands. Dr. King's widow, Coretta Scott King, visited Resurrection City on Mother's Day. A longtime peace activist, Mrs. King tied the damage being caused by the U.S. war in Vietnam to the conditions needed to end poverty. Let's listen to Coretta Scott King.
Dr. Abernathy, residents of Resurrection City, and my fellow citizens, I stand here today with many mixed emotions. For it was 5 years ago that my late husband, Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr., stood in this very spot and told the nation about his dream. Yesterday marked the 15th wedding anniversary for me and my late husband. Your presence here today indicates to me your great love, devotion, and dedication to those ideals which my husband set forth in his dream and which you will continue to follow through until they are fulfilled. I want to thank all of you from all over this nation who have come here in support of this Solidarity Day. I want to especially thank the National Urban League under the direction of Dr. Whitney Young, and especially Mr. Sterling Tucker, the coordinator of this Solidarity Day, for the tremendous support that you have given the Southern Christian Leadership Conference in order to make this occasion possible. Now, I know Dr. Abernathy would do this, but I want to tell you how much it means to me personally, because it was my husband who conceived the idea of a poor people's campaign. And now I should like to read to you a telegram which I received from another lady who was just recently victimized by the same tragedy which my family and I were victimized by. Today, on this most important day for all Americans, my heart and prayers are with you. The finest memorial to Dr. Martin Luther King would be the tangible action our country takes now to implement the programs he and my husband cared about so deeply. Signed, Mrs. Ethel Kennedy. And now I should like to sing for you, Come By Here, My Lord, Come By Here.
Mrs. King is preparing to sing a hymn. She's just spoken tribute to her late husband, and she's now going to sing.
It is fitting and proper that we come again to the Lincoln Memorial, this symbolic and historic spot where we have come several times before to present our case to the President, to the Congress of the United States, and to the American people. We are here because we feel a frightful sense of urgency to rectify the long-standing evils and injustices in our society, racism, poverty, and war. The Poor People's Campaign was conceived by my late husband, Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr., as America's last chance to solve these problems nonviolently. The sickness of racism, the despair of poverty, and the hopelessness of war have served to deepen the hatred, heighten the bitterness, increase the frustration, and further alienate the poor in our society. The rumblings of discontent from the disinherited, downtrodden, dispossessed of our society have finally become united around the issue of poverty. The least of these, God's children, have been ill-housed, ill-fed, deprived of adequate jobs and educational opportunities, and barred from full participation in the political life of this nation. To Washington, seeking to better their conditions, and in so doing, they are dramatizing this nation, to this nation and to the world, the desperateness of their plight. In a nation so rich in natural resources and material wealth, the richest nation in the world, a nation founded on the principles of justice and equality for all. Some 30 million of its citizens are denied access to the wealth that surrounds them. I'm speaking of the American Indians, the Mexican Americans, the Puerto Ricans, Black Americans, and the white poor, who all live below the poverty line. Too long have we uttered pious platitudes and made faulty promises to our less fortunate brothers. Our destiny is tied up with their destiny, and we are being forced to place the issues where they belong, squarely on the conscience of the American people. All of the problems we face in trying to build a community and a nation of brotherhood, which we need desperately, can be attributed to what I call the triple evils of our time: racism, poverty, and war. All three of these evils can be reduced to violence. We can therefore say that violence is the disease which threatens to destroy the basic fabric of which our society is woven. The undergirding fabric of love, understanding, justice, and peace. Racism in American society can be traced to the period of slavery in this country, when it was felt that black persons were completely inferior to white persons. Perhaps racism can be traced to that dark period in our history when slavery became institutionalized for 244 years, and segregation was practiced for another 100 years. So you see, the roots of racism are very deep in the psyche of the American white man. All forms of economic, political, social, educational, and religious exclusion of the black man from the mainstream of society can be attributed to racism. Therefore, racism means being deprived of human dignity, self-respect, and equal opportunities in education, of jobs, of decent housing, political and social endeavors. Extreme hatred and bitterness against the black man has been shown by the white man due to his racist tendencies. Often this hatred has manifested itself in the violence of lynchings and murders, by which many Negroes and white civil rights workers have been victimized, to say nothing of the crippling effects of segregation and discrimination which have been experienced. Racism is related to poverty, in that it is easy to display racist attitudes toward a minority group, whether they be black, red, brown, or yellow. When we talk about poor people, we are dealing with the class structure of society. Therefore, the poor whites are similarly affected. The difference between the poor whites and the poor blacks, red, yellow, or brown, is that it is possible for the white poor to lose their identity as they become more affluent because they do not carry the stigma of color as the society would refer to it. Poverty can produce the most deadly kind of violence. In this society, violence against poor people and minority groups is routine. I remind you that starving a child is violence. Suppressing a culture is violence. Neglecting school children is violence. Punishing a mother and her child is violence. Discrimination against a working man is violence. Ghetto housing is violence. Ignoring medical needs is violence. Contempt for poverty is violence. Even the lack of willpower to help humanity is a sick and sinister form of violence. The violence of war is understood by everyone. There is hardly a family which has not been victimized by the effects of war, in that a husband, a father, a son, or a brother has been wounded or killed in the line of duty. What a nonsensical and cruel way to try to resolve conflicts. In recent months, when we as a nation have experienced the loss of two of the great men of our time through violent means, we have come to realize and understand the broad dimensions of violence in our society. The problems of racism, poverty, and war can all be summarized with one word, violence, which seems to be fashionable in our society. If we do not stop this madness, we will certainly destroy ourselves and the whole world. There is need for a creative approach to the crucial problems which we face in our nation and in the world. I believe firmly that the women of our country have been called at this hour to furnish the kind of forthright, honest, dedicated, and creative leadership necessary to bring about positive solutions to the difficult problems we face. The approach must be the nonviolent approach, for the means must be in keeping with the ends. Because these problems of our society, which I have discussed, affect the women of this nation so deeply, I believe that they will see the necessity of joining a campaign of conscience in which all ethnic groups, all religious persuasions, all economic circumstances, and all cultural backgrounds will unite to produce a solid block of woman power. In seeking solutions to the three evils of racism, poverty, and war, it is clear that there is need for a renewal of the great spiritual and moral insights embedded in our cultural heritage. We must dedicate and rededicate ourselves to making a society based on the principles of love, truth, nonviolence, justice, and peace. This does mean a kind of rethinking and reordering of values and priorities. Women, if the soul of this nation is to be saved, I believe that you must become its soul. You must speak out against the evils of our times as you see them. Those of us women who have been blessed with the privilege of bearing children have the sacred task of rearing them with a knowledge and understanding of our democratic heritage and the eternal values of love, justice, mercy, and peace. As women and mothers, we have a common concern for the happiness of our children and their families, to unite our efforts throughout the world. We must compel those governments which ignore human dignity, which deny freedom of the individual, which block social progress and national independence, to put an end to every sort of persecution. Somehow we must rid ourselves of racism and teach our children the meaning of true brotherhood. Our children must be taught to be concerned about and to develop a deep sense of appreciation for those who are less fortunate than themselves, the least of these. They must know that all of society is interrelated. What affects one directly affects all indirectly. Women must realize that the war in Vietnam is the most crucial and evil war in the history of mankind. And that they have a moral obligation to oppose it. If enough women spoke out against the Vietnam War and stood firm in their opposition, even to being willing to go to jail if necessary, I think it would make a tremendous impact on the president and the policymakers of this nation. If we stop the war 4 months and one day sooner, we could eliminate the need for 10% surcharge tax. We could create 400,000 new jobs with the money we would save if we stopped the war 14 minutes sooner. If we stopped the war 2 months sooner, we could build 300,000 new housing units with the money. 1 hour of war could buy your community a new school, hospital, or cultural center. All of this is to say that a guaranteed income, a job for those who need a job, could be had if the war was stopped and the will created by our government to act on behalf of its deprived citizens. Women, I urge you to call upon the president to stop the bombing of Vietnam now in order that a settlement of the war can be negotiated. If we are to survive this dreadful period of social change, we must adhere tenaciously to the philosophy of nonviolence. We, the women, must lead the way in adopting nonviolence as a way of life. We must teach our children the nonviolent way so as to stop the chain of violence which is spiraling in our society. The first step is to recognize the power of love. It is the answer to all of the problems which mankind faces. Love is the key to understanding. Love is the only force that can destroy hate. If we act now, we still have a chance. Our choice is between nonviolent coexistence and violent co-annihilation. The road to justice, peace, and brotherhood is difficult. We must renew our strength, increase our faith, and gird our courage. In the words of the black poet, the late Langston Hughes, a black mother counsels her son to keep faith in the future. In her ungrammatical profundity, she speaks, "Well, son, I'll tell you, life for me ain't been no crystal stair. It's had tacks in it, and splinters, and boards torn up, and places with no carpet on the floor, bare. But all the time I's been climbing on and reaching landings and turning corners and sometimes going in the dark where there ain't been no light. So boy, don't you sit down on the steps 'cause you finds it's kind of hard. Don't you stop now. For I's still going, honey. I's still climbing. And life for me ain't been no crystal stair."
When did I get off on the wrong road? And when did I stop listening to my heart? I've been driving with the brakes on, been spinning wheels for much too long. That's okay, I've got a brand new start. I'm gonna build me a house out in the country. I'm gonna spend some time picking with old Dan. I'm gonna listen to the nightfall, sit around, just have a ball. The home folks, they'll have to understand. I'm gonna be my own man. I'm gonna sing my own songs. Gonna walk in all the light that I see. I'm gonna love everybody just as much as I can. Singing glory, hallelujah, when God gets through with me. There's a place through the clouds that we call heaven, where the lion will lay down by the child, where a kind and gentle man's gonna take us by the hand, saying, welcome home, let's talk a while. Where I can be my own man, gonna sing my own songs, gonna walk in all the light that I see. I'm gonna love everybody just as much as I can, singing glory, hallelujah, when God gets through with me. I'm gonna be my own man, I'm gonna sing my own songs, gonna walk in all the light that I see. I'm gonna love everybody just as much as I can, singing glory, hallelujah, when God gets through with me. I'm gonna be my own man, I'm gonna sing my own songs, gonna walk in all the light that I see. I'm gonna love everybody just as much as I can, singing glory, hallelujah, when God gets through with me. Singing glory, hallelujah, glory, hallelujah, singing glory, hallelujah, when God gets through with me.
Hi, my name is Representative Linda Harriet Gathright, and I'm from Nashua. And the holiday for Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King is really important. It's important for all of us, for everyone. And I say that because we still have issues today that we had years ago, to be honest. Maybe not to that degree, but we're still trying to make life in economics, in schooling, in every aspect of life better. And that was his dream, that we all would be together. And for me, I work in the community with Southern New Hampshire Outreach of Black Unity. I work with Greater Nashua NAACP, and actually work with another organization, National Community Conversation on Race and Justice. And again, in all these organizations, we're still trying to make life, particularly for people of color, African Americans and whoever, life to be great, to be better, to be on an even pole with everyone. And so we still have issues. We have systemic issues that we're trying to address. We have issues in each of the cities and towns and states, actually, across the United States that still need to be addressed. And unless you're actually out there working to make that change, it's not going to happen. So we all need to stick together to make life better for everyone. It's meaningful because when you look back to then, when he died, he was actually trying to help workers. So he would jump out there, and it didn't matter what the situation was or who the situation was about, but it was a wrong situation, one that could be corrected. So he lived his life really working on making the United States better, literally for everyone. And I feel like when I'm out here and when I'm in the State House, I'm looking at the larger picture as he's looked at the larger picture across the United States. But I look at these pictures, even working in the community, of just, again, just trying to make changes that will make the next generation and the next generation. There will always have to be people that have a broad range of looking at the world that we live in today. And always have to be someone to do the work.
That was Representative Linda Harriet Gathright from Nashua. I'm Arnie Alpert. You are listening to a special Martin Luther King Day edition of Statehouse Watch on WNHN-LP in Concord.
Hello, my name's Martin Till. I am from Africa. I'm Ivorian Liberian, and Martin Luther King Day represents hope. To me, personally, he's an inspiration. I look at his life as someone that I look at him as the GOAT, as the greatest of all time, and someone that I aspire to be like, and someone whose life that I look at and reflect on and see that the greater good of humanity. Part of his life that I want to emulate is his values, particularly his faith and his ability to be able to speak to people and cause them to see why it's important for us to come together. I think his strong belief in justice and justice as being the fundamental base and root of the right of all humanity, I think, is something that I aspire to. And it's just a strong faith in God and believing that when people hear the truth, that it has the ability to change things and cause things to move.
You got to move, you got to move, you got to move, child, you got to move. But when they law, get ready, you got to move. You may be high, you may be low, you may be rich, you may be poor, but when the Lord gets ready, you got to move. You see that woman that walked the street. You see that policeman out on the beat. But when in love, you get ready, you got to move. You got to move, you got to move, you got to move, child, you got to move. But when and all, get ready.
I accept this award today with an abiding faith in America and an audacious faith in the future of mankind. I refuse to accept despair as the final response to the ambiguities of history. I refuse to accept the idea that the isness of man's present nature makes him morally incapable of reaching up for the eternal oughtness that forever confronts him. I refuse to accept the idea that man is mere flotsam and jetsam in the river of life, unable to influence the unfolding events which surround him. I refuse to accept the view that mankind is so tragically bound to the starless midnight of racism and war that the bright daybreak of peace and brotherhood can never become a reality. I refuse to accept the cynical notion that nation after nation must spiral down a militaristic stairway into the hell of nuclear annihilation. I believe that unarmed truth and unconditional love will have the final word in reality. This is why right temporarily defeated is stronger than evil triumphant. I believe that even amid today's mortar bursts and whining bullets, that is still hope for a brighter tomorrow. I believe that wounded justice, lying prostrate on the blood-flowing streets of our nations, can be lifted from this dust of shame to reign supreme among the children of men. I have the audacity to believe that peoples everywhere can have 3 meals a day for their bodies, education and culture for their minds, and dignity, equality, and freedom for their spirits. I believe that what self-centered men have torn down, men other-centered can build up. I still believe that one day mankind will bow before the altars of God and be crowned triumphant over war and bloodshed. And nonviolent redemptive goodwill proclaim the rule of the land. And the lion and the lamb shall lie down together, and every man shall sit under his own vine and fig tree, and none shall be afraid. I still believe that we shall overcome. This faith can give us courage to face the uncertainties of the future. It will give our tired feet new strength as we continue our forward stride toward the city of freedom. When our days become dreary with low hovering clouds, and our nights become darker than 1,000 midnights, we will know that we are living in the creative turmoil of a genuine civilization struggling to be born.
I'm Arnie Alpert, co-host of Statehouse Watch. You've been listening to a special Martin Luther King Day program, which we finished up with an extract from Dr. King's Nobel Prize acceptance speech. Maggie Fogarty and I will be back next week with a live show and the latest news from the Statehouse. Thanks to our producer, Fred Portnoy, and thanks to you for listening to WNHN LP 94.7 FM and WNHNFM.org. We're going out with Bob Marley's song Slave Driver from the Smithsonian album, Songs of Our Native Daughters.
Catch a fire, so you can get burned.
Catch a fire.
catch a fire.
Poverty, good God, I think it's a literacy. It's only